You will be joined into the conference. Please announce yourself.
Daniel Anderson.
Daniel, hey.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, it's Matthias. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Well, first, I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, a pleasure, all mine. All good.
Is anybody else joining us, or?
I think it's just you and me.
Sean.
Okay.
Coming on, or?
I think he was calling in. I didn't know if he was already on the line or not.
He's not on the line yet.
Okay.
Oh, I think that's him.
Okay.
Sean Garmer.
All right. Sean?
Hi, is it Matthias?
Yes.
Okay. Is Daniel here too? Just need to make sure.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Okay. So I'm in London at the moment. I'm enjoying the rain. And thanks to both of you for hopping on the phone.
Well, thank you for having us, sir. Daniel, you want to go ahead?
Okay. Just to start out with, again, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. Since our website is pretty heavy on video games and wrestling, in addition to just general entertainment, and given the way that the how the movie is about a person being taken into a video game, are you a general fan of video games at all, or?
Yes, absolutely. I kind of, you know, I started by actually trying to program my own games with my older brother on the Commodore 64. And then I kind of went all the way from Amiga to PC gaming to the first PlayStation. And then, yeah, at the moment I'm on the PlayStation 4.
Okay. What type of games do you like playing?
The last game I played, I finished, was a little bit, Call of Duty, what was the latest? Black Ops 3, I just finished. Before that, I was into Fallout 4, I did, I like shooters, and when I have the time, open world kind of games, but nowadays I don't have the time for those, usually.
I understand. Have you tried the PlayStation VR headset at all?
You know, I tried the, what's the other one? The HTC? Is that the one?
The Vive?
The Vive?
Yes, that's the one. I did a few games on that. Not the PlayStation one yet. I haven't got the PlayStation 4 Plus, and I wanted to wait for that. Oh, is it the PlayStation 4 Pro, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I have a regular...
Pretty amazing, isn't it, I think?
I'm sorry?
I mean, pretty amazing, the virtual reality headsets. The best thing you can think of for any zombie survivor, shoot him up. So scary and immersive, isn't it? You have these things creeping up behind you, and you have to swirl around and attack them. And I found it quite impressive. I think, personally, one more generation for higher resolution, but that was sort of my takeaway.
Yeah, I have the PlayStation headset, and I played Resident Evil a lot. And I think flight sim games are also where the VR headsets really show how well they work.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I think it's exciting, I think.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Just being able to look around.
Not so much for movies, I think. I don't know if it's going to work for movies, but for games, I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I think sports it could work really well for, if you can get the right camera setups. But yeah, I agree. Movies,
yeah.
I mean, movies just seem like it would be a little bit too hard to try to loop everything in on that, especially having the full 360
yeah, exactly.
view.
So it becomes more like an amusement park ride than a story that you're being told. So the framing of a storyteller, I guess. But yeah, I wouldn't mind being live in 360 and inside at a WWF wrestling ring or something. You know, but let's see if that happens.
Yeah, that would be really nice to see.
Did you, you know, having Batista on set has to be kind of cool. I mean, were you a fan of wrestling at all? Is that kind of a reason why you casted him, or is it from his acting work?
Well, you know, I was a fan. I have to confess I stopped watching wrestling about 10 years ago, but I was aware of him through some of the matches, and I spoke to him before he was in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I had seen him in a movie called The Man with the Iron Fist, actually, which was one of his first roles. And I had when he came up, I sort of had this amazing interview with him over Skype where he said to me, Matthias, with his deep gravelly growling voice, so I really like the role of Arun, because, you know, he's kind of, I see him as a funny guy. And you know what? You know, at the moment, every time I go to an audition, all people ask me is to roar and growl and shout, and I'm not like that. I'm like a really nice, lovely guy, and I don't want to play a role like that. And I had to laugh, because, you know, of course he is sort of has this huge physical presence and this sort of deep booming voice, and at the same time he's got a really funny glint in his eyes, and he is very playful. And on set I realized that he's also the loveliest person you could imagine. So you know, I thought when I spoke to him, it was sort of one of those moments when, you know, okay, he's perfect. And 2 weeks later, Guardians of the Galaxy came out, and, you know, that kind of obviously didn't hurt. But I kind of knew beforehand that he was, you know, if I was lucky enough, he was the man to do it. And he was very accommodating, because he came to join us just after, or like the day after he finished shooting Spectre. And he sort of moved heaven and earth to make sure that he could join us on the film and make the schedules work. And I really appreciate that. It was great. And, you know, in terms of the film itself, you know, what kind of, when I got the script, which, you know, as a sort of European filmmaker, I had only done a low budget film before, you get a script with written by Luc Besson and Robert Kamen, you know, you already start getting a little bit excited, because, of course, Robert Kamen wrote the original Karate Kid, and he did Fifth Element together with Luc, and then films like Taken and A Million Things in Between. And I was sort of very excited about it. And what I really appreciated was I kind of liked the slightly 90s throwback narrative, you know, that reminded me of The Last Starfighter, of Karate Kid, of course, and also of those, of the kind of Asian movies I grew up watching, like Chui Huck's A Chinese Ghost Story, or Chang Yimou's Hero, or The House of Flying Daggers, which were really cool martial arts movies. And I always, you know, I always wanted to do a martial arts movie. I did martial arts as a teenager myself, and I thought, how much fun would it be to make a film like this? But then I always thought also, as a sort of German who lives in London, the kind of pitch of I want to do a martial arts movie would only really work with a sort of one of two Western producers involved, and that would be either Quentin Tarantino or Luc Besson. So I was very excited when I got the script, and sort of a chance to make a boyhood dream come true. And to me, I felt like the comedy in the script and the sort of innocence kind of carries the story through, and the sort of big-hearted emotions you can feel for all the characters. So kind of that was key for me. I felt maybe it's not the most original premise you could think of, but I just like the sentiment and the warmth of the story. And then I also liked the action sequences, really. And I remember when I kind of showed Luke the cut of the film, he was like, oh, I forgot there were so many action sequences in the script. And I was like, yeah, you know, and you let me do that. It's great. So, you know, it's great when you have a producer who doesn't cut half the action sequences when you get into budgeting, but he sort of just let me do the script. And that was kind of exciting.
What were some of the...
I thought that was one of the things that you absolutely nailed there, was the fine things. They were probably one of the best parts of the film. You know, I noticed that Uriah Shelton also has like a Taekwondo background, and did the actors like do their own stunts? Did it help that... how hard was it to shoot those sequences?
Well, I think I've worked with a really great Hong Kong action choreographer called Tony Ling, who was second in command on Kill Bill, for example. And with his team, we really worked together to create those action sequences. And what was amazing about Uriah Shelton, who, you know, is really just a still very young actor. I kind of, when he walked into the room, I kind of, with his, and did the audition, and I saw his easygoing charm and his sort of cheekiness, and at the same time that he was sort of incredibly good looking, but a little bit humble and fun. I already had cast him in my mind, and only at the end of the session, he said, "Oh, and by the way, did you know that I've got a black belt in Taekwondo?" And I was like, "Yes, perfect." Because in the end, it turned out that he was better than his stunt double at almost everything, basically. So he did all the stunts himself, and he was amazing. And it makes a big difference because, of course, you can hold the shots longer, and you can feel what the performers are feeling while they're fighting, and it makes a big difference. Now, I think, for example, it was Nini's first martial arts movie, and she did a lot of the martial arts herself. But then, you know, when the guys go into it and you know, into an action setup and get a bruise or something, you know, we're all like, yeah, bruise, no problem. But when someone like Nini, who is sort of a perfect porcelain doll of a person, you know, when she kind of broke a fingernail on a piece of armor punching someone, I'd be like so worried about it. Oh my God, you broke a fingernail. It's terrible because she's so perfect. So, for example, she would have, on some scenes, she would have an action double doing some of the more dangerous things, of course, for safety and all of that. I mean, I think it's always, of course, better to have all the action done by the actors themselves. But then, and that's why people like Jackie Chan, who used to do that, have you know, risen and become so famous. But I think a balance is kind of also doable, I guess. I'm trying to say, I mean, what the way I'm approaching it really is I try to make every scene primarily a sort of a traditional storytelling scene. Every action scene, you know, should have a beginning, middle, and end, just like any other scene in the film. And you should always know what your protagonist is facing off against, and then sort of be with him and feel with him as he's trying to figure out how to overcome the obstacles that are thrown his way, whether that's, you know, a giant mutated monster, or if it's, you know, three samurai chasing at him, you know, and kind of, that's kind of, to me, the key. As long as you understand the geography and you understand what your protagonist is feeling and how he's figuring out how to get around the attack. That's, to me, a successful action sequence. I think, of course, in modern action, there's a balance that's difficult to hit now, where some audiences are very used to fast cutting, and often it's too fast, and you lose the sense of how a fight works. At the same time, when you do slow fights without cutting, sometimes audiences find them too slow and they don't feel the impact enough. And I try to find a balance between the two where, as much as possible, try to really keep the geography clear, keep clear what everyone's feeling, and also get a good pace to the action sequences.
Are we about 1 minute left?
Were there any funny stories that you can relate from the filming of the movie, like anything that kind of stands out and makes you laugh as you think back on it?
I mean, let me see. I mean, the Nini's broken fingernail really did bring me to tears almost. And then, you know, I think Uriah made us laugh all the way through. He had an injury on the shoot, but it wasn't on set. It was when he was sort of air guitaring like in his hotel room. He slipped and sort of had a bruised foot, which, you know, is sort of medium funny, but I mean, overall, you know, it was just such an amazing opportunity for all of us to go and, you know, work with a French team, American writer, a German Londoner, going to China with a huge Chinese team where, you know, where you kind of make movies at a scale that we sort of don't really do anymore in the West. So, for example, I kind of one day I discovered a whole department of 20 people working on the film, and I didn't even know what they were doing. And my stylist told me, well, you know, that's your wig department, and all they did was make all the beards and fake wigs for all the background extras. And we had like 900 of those, 900 fake beards, I think. If you had them, if you were to buy them in London or in the US, they'd be $5,000 a piece. But we just had them lying everywhere, and it was pretty special, you know. And the same, you know, with the armor, where you could just get everything made out of steel. And the Asian teams were so wanting to please and wanting to do great stuff. They took all the designs that I created and, you know, made this amazing Roman armor for the Black Knight at the beginning. And it was incredibly detailed and incredibly beautiful. But then someone decided that it would be cool to have Mexican murals down the side of the helmet. And I said to them, guys, well, how can you have Mexican murals on the side of a Roman antique helmet? And, you know, they were just sort of looking at me puzzled and went, okay, no problem, we'll change it. And then the next day it was changed. It was sort of very flexible, and people, you know, they worked overnight to get it done. And that was really impressive to just to work with teams that were so fast moving and ambitious and you know, kind of were trying to kind of get our cultures to come together. And I hope more of those kind of projects will still happen. You know, at the moment it's kind of a difficult process where people are trying to figure out if it actually works to make entertainment in co-productions. Or, you know, you look at The Great Wall, of course, or Ghost in the Shell. There was a lot of controversy around those films, but I think that conversation is very good, because it'll just really encourage everyone to try better next time, and to also maybe educate audiences to try films they wouldn't have otherwise seen. And, you know, I think hopefully good things will come from this process, you know, artistically good things and entertaining things. So, you know, I think it's an interesting time to be making films.
There's a innocent part in the film where the princess is there with Uriah Shelton's character in the mall, and the first American kind of food that she eats is ice cream. Do you have a favorite ice cream flavor?
Yes. I would say cookies and cream all the way.
You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. I guess normally it'd be Häagen-Dazs pretty name cream. Sort of. Do you have Häagen-Dazs? Sort of a.
Yeah, we do. It's Danish. It's usually on the expensive side here, but you know.
Yeah. What's your favorite ice cream?
Oh my gosh. I probably like chocolate chip cookie dough. That's probably my favorite, actually.
You know, there's in Berlin, when I was younger, there was an ice cream parlor or ice cream vendor had a Smurf flavored ice cream. So it looked like it was Smurf colored and it was called Smurf ice cream. I thought it was kind of interesting to eat Smurf ice cream. I don't know if anyone else in the world has that, but that was one I ate growing up.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm surprised they didn't come out with one after, you know, they made the movies and everything.
I mean, I'm sure it was strictly non-licensed and non-allowed, but you know. But hey, it's all good.
Daniel, good, you have
Well, I was just going to ask. You were talking a little bit about how the co-productions went. Did you find it easier in some ways to make the movie the way that you did, or was it a little bit more complicated trying to involve all these different people from different parts of the world?
You know, it's very complicated because, you know, because first of all, the language barrier is very complicated. So even the French were kind of sometimes having difficulties understanding English, and the Chinese crews, of course. So you end up talking with pictures mostly. And then also in terms of casting, you know, to find a cast that can, you know, can speak English is Chinese, but also, you know, mainland Chinese, and then can do kung fu or is American and can do fighting, and to work that out was really, really complicated, you know, because there's not so many actors and crew to choose from that, you know, speak both languages, understand both cultures, and that was not very easy. It would have been, for example, a lot easier to make an all Chinese movie in Chinese language, because then your choice of actors would have been much easier and a lot more straightforward, I guess. But I think, you know, I thought at one point we could, I thought about doing a 50-50 Mandarin English version, but that was also too complicated. Then you know, you can't really show it in properly here in the US. And so, yeah, complicated.
Is it something you would do again with, you would be interested in doing again with all the complications, or is it something that was a little bit more difficult than what you thought?
It's really the most difficult thing you can think of, but and you know, that's the reason why there's been so very few co-productions that have you know, have succeeded in a good film by the end of it. But I think I mean, I really like being in China, and I loved working with the team there, and also with Tony Ling, the fight choreographer. And I could see myself doing a martial arts movie there, maybe something. I've been thinking about maybe a really tough R-rated martial arts movie in Asia. That would be a lot of fun as the next project.
Sorry, we're just about out of time.
All right. Well, thank you again, Matthias, for being on with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And hope you got what you need. And I look forward to checking up. I'm actually on your way. I've been on your website, and I like what you're showing there and writing there. And I'm going to check out more after this call.
More than welcome to.
Thank you.
Thank you again for your time.
Take care.
Thank you.